you know, take a seat. Danita's here.
Good morning, Danita. Folks, could we convene? It says 9 o'clock.
I'm going to go see Barry.
Could we have a volunteer for a timekeeper, please? Could we have a volunteer for a timekeeper, please? Could we have a volunteer for a timekeeper, please? I could start singing. If we could get going, there could be. Could we have a... No, it's not contextually correct to do that. Yes, although we really are not going to need it until the bylaws amendment part of the agenda. Folks, we need to get started, please. No, my name is Warner Bloomberg from Santa Clara County.
My name is Jane Rands from Orange County.
The coordinating committee on Friday night asked us to facilitate today's session. We agreed. Is there any objection to us proceeding in that fashion? Because if there is, that means you have to do it. Okay, we'll take that as an affirmation of the facilitators. We still need a timekeeper and a vibes watcher. Do I have a volunteer for a timekeeper? No one wants to keep time, okay? And we need someone to volunteer as a vibes watcher. Do we have a volunteer for that? I hear a voice over here who says Gloria Purcell has volunteered to be our vibes watcher. Sam Mateo County. So folks, just so you all know, I have a seeing disability, and if you wave your hands or put your hands up in the air, I'm likely not to see that. Jane is going to be the person who will be calling on people for all the usual hand waving. So we have an agenda published. There's a minor change. There's a CCWG breakout group that has been added to the first session. We're having one brief additional speaker in our Prop 14 presentation. Otherwise, the agenda is pretty much going to proceed as published. Is there any? Oh, okay, I was just about to ask for any announcements from the host committee, and if these other items could be done really quickly, could we do them right away now? All right, so first, are there any announcements from the host committee at this time?
Good morning. Glad to see everybody here. I'm back with the recycling again. And we have a small recycling over here. In the back of the room, there's one for trash. Over by the end of the counter is the compost one. And today we got a special one, request for these biodegradable cups, the empty cups. If you'll put them in here, they're for Comron. He wants them for his garden work, okay? So thank you.
Where are you going to have that?
I'm going to put this right over near the compost pile.
Which one are the biodegradable cups?
Any of the hot ones. In fact, all of the hot ones are.
Not this one.
Not yours. No, not yours. Not your hot cup, but actually all the cups are. Thank you very much, and thanks so much for helping with the recycling yesterday.
And let's all give a big hand to Maxine. Maxine is the one who brought you breakfast.
Okay.
Today we even have Pete's Coffee, which many of you probably know, started in 1967 right here in the People's Republic of Berkeley on Vine Street.
Oh, okay. If I have to stick with that far behind. Okay, so quick, that concludes the announcements from the host committee, I take it?
Yes.
Okay. Barry and Jim, you're going to make a short presentation then on... Okay, please come up and do that now. Yep.
Jim Stauffer, Santa Clara County. We talked about the new coordinating committee at large election. You know, we went through that yesterday. It's this online election and all that. We have this situation where the bulk of the candidates didn't show up here, and they were specifically requested to. It was in the original proposal. You know, you have to come to the election meeting for questions and answers. One candidate, in addition to that, see, the coordinating committee sent out an informational message to them a few weeks back to all of the candidates. We requested a couple of things from them. We reminded them that they're required to show up here. They're requested to show up here. And the other one was we asked them to tell us which county they're from, because several of them sent in their bios and didn't tell us which county they're from, and we needed to know that. So those were like two requests from them, and we only got a response from one of the candidates. So we're in the situation where the bulk of the candidates didn't even show up. Only one of them even bothered responding, telling us what county they're from. Now, a few already had told us, so that's okay. The one person who responded with their county, and the one person who had the courtesy to give, I guess, Barry a call and say, listen, I can't make it because of this family situation, was Sean, whatever his last name is.
I learned about that at the fundraiser.
Yeah, and he mentioned that yesterday. So, you know, that's legitimate. He's complied to the best of his ability. The other candidates we're not too sure about, and it's kind of a question, because once somebody is elected, you know, that's considered a filled seat and it counts towards quorum, and making quorum has been the perennial problem on the coordinating committee. So we're in a bit of a quandary. Do we want to go ahead and say these are legitimate candidates and we want you to vote for them? Or do we say they didn't quite make the requirements, we better not, otherwise we might end up with a whole bunch of empty seats, because we really don't know at this point whether, you know, they're serious candidates or not. A lot of these people, you know, none of us know. They were new names to us, so we can't personally vouch for them. So we're in a bit of a quandary. And
May I suggest?
Yeah, go ahead.
May I suggest that any of the folks that did not show up yesterday, we do need more bodies on our coordinating committee. We need more, you know, more people to do the work. I would propose that we do communicate with them again to say, you know, we had a preference that you do show up at the plenary so people can at least meet you and understand who is choosing to participate in leadership of the party. You, for one reason or another, you were not able to be here. Do you still wish to be involved? And because we haven't put out the ballot yet electronically. And if they don't respond to that, That's clear. That's very clear.
I'd just like to, we've got some hands up now, and this is becoming a discussion on a decision as opposed to a presentation as to how we're going to do the election. How do we want to handle this? We're cutting into other time. Okay, great. And Sandra?
I didn't see one person that listed wasn't here yesterday.
Well, when we asked for candidates to come up, only two people stood up and came.
No, there were about four. There were about eight people that were listed.
One guy had one, two, three.
Right.
And then, no, five, the, you know, like five people here. Wasn't Dave Heller was here?
No.
Dave Heller was here. Okay, that was just that two people there. Tim Lehman was here. Kate Tanaka came late. Sean Dodd, you had a call. Me, Lauren was here. And Joseph Heller was here. So the only ones that weren't here were Jim Garrity and Dave Heller. And Dave Heller was a candidate. Now he's a candidate.
Well, I'm going to explain to Dave. Dave had a previous engagement in New York State before this meeting was even set. And so when we set it, he said, well, I'm sorry, I already had a previous engagement.
Okay.
Michael Bornstein, did you have?
He's on our county council. I can talk about it. Okay. So then we really only have one person in question.
No, because this was supposed to be simply an announcement or a report.
Okay.
Well, no, it wasn't. We said we had a problem with the election and we wanted some agenda time for it.
We just need to make a quick decision. This shouldn't be that difficult.
Okay, so it's only one. So there was
Michael Bornstein, I'll go out of county. Only to add it, it's been a long time CC member. There's a lot of us, you too, Mike. There's a lot of us, Matt Leslie, break our back to make sure we get to meeting and notify you when we can to alleviate that quorum problem. If a person starts on one of our committees by not showing up and not communicating, you're never going to get any kind of grassroots participation with that kind of thing. So they should be given one more chance to communicate, well, like me, and ask to resubmit that later date.
Okay.
Folks, we have absolutely no right at all for somebody who has followed the rules. The only rules that exist in our rules are you submit an application by a certain date. There's no requirement to be here. There's no requirement to do any of this stuff. We have absolutely no right to tell anybody who has submitted, even if you call them back and they don't respond. They submitted on time. I have sat in my one month back on the boarding committee and watched there be resistance to anybody who has come and wanted to join this committee in the last couple of months.
All right, Vibes.
Exclude anybody who is a
part. Okay.
All right. I think this is more than I understood to be involved in the request for time. So I think what we need to do is proceed with the agenda item, and it's likely there will be time left over afterwards. So let's proceed in that fashion. People are now aware this is an issue. And Jim, perhaps you said you could check the minutes or notes from the COTADI meeting to clarify the requirement. All right, so are Mr. Winger and Mr. Gota here? Would you like to come up to... I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name. Well, that's what people do to... Would the speakers please come up and okay, and just to let people know, we're going to have presentations for about 25 or 30 minutes combined, and Michael Rubin also is going to make about a five-minute presentation, and when the presentations are over, we'll have a stack for questions and answers directed to the speakers. So that's how we're... Yes? Yes, we do. So, yeah. And the speakers also. So, is Richard's going to go first? Okay. So we're waiting.
Anyone in the audience here?
Hey, Mike, were you able to bring your laptop? Yes. Totally screwed up, however, and left the passage.
Okay. Sir, yes, so, please. I'm sorry, can't see anything from here.
And our screen is over there.
Yes, Jane?
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Excuse me, Michael.
I have a question. Do you know if there will be an experience for announcements today?
Either right before, right after lunch, or both.
I can. Oh, is there one other announcement we're supposed to make yesterday?
Which is?
Did you see about the committees that were open?
Why don't you do that now, quickly, while we're waiting for the speaker?
As most of you know, we have working groups to which anybody can just join, and we have standing committees that the coordinating committee appoints. So right now, there are 7 seats open on the 8-seat bylaw committee, 7 seats open on the 8-seat finance committee, 6 seats open on the 8-seat platform committee. And the thinking in the coordinating committee was that as soon as the new folks are elected to the coordinating committee, the CC would try to go ahead and appoint some more folks to those standing committees. So after this state meeting, there will be an email out in the county contacts list reprising what I just mentioned for those committees that are open, with the idea that hopefully a bunch of you folks and others at home we'll go ahead and apply so that by sometime in June, when the new CC is together, we can fill those committees with more people, because pretty much those 3 have almost nobody on. Media is full. Clearinghouse also has no one on. None. Completely empty.
So, Richard, I understand you're proceeding first, and our note taker has asked that you state your full name, and then we're going to go to the your 2 proceedings, a short proceeding by one of our members, and then we'll open up a staff for questions and answers, okay? And you can use this mic here or that one, whichever you want.
And how many minutes did I speak?
Well,
we have a half an hour.
Okay, yeah. I'll probably just take 10 minutes.
Okay.
Is this turned on? She says no. Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Hi, I'm Richard Winger, and I thank you very much. Mike Feinstein might have made a scoop me. I called him yesterday, and he said, "I can't talk to him at me." I said, "The Arizona Green Party's on the ballot." I don't know. Did you tell everybody? Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. And they did it by very skillful lobbying. They persuaded the Secretary of State of Arizona to include in his omnibus election law bill a provision saying, once you do all the hard work of getting on the ballot, it is hard, it's about 20-some thousand signatures, then you get the next 2 elections, not just 1. So I'm also going to just take 30 seconds, and then I'll get to the main topic, to suggest that Greens need to work now on ballot access in as many states as possible while the weather is good, petitioning is pleasant. New Mexico Green Party is not on the ballot, but the Arizona Greens, the Colorado Greens, and the Texas Greens are. I would hope that to the extent you talk to Greens in those states, you ask them, just send people into New Mexico and get that petition done. It's only 3,000 signatures. And looking closer to home, Nevada Green Party is not on the ballot, and they need 7,000 signatures. None of these states have any laws against out-of-state petitioners. Think carefully about having some organized way for California Greens to go to Las Vegas or Reno and help the Greens in Nevada get those 7,000 signatures. While the weather is good and it's pleasant. Okay, and I'll get to the main topic here. Gautam has been doing wonderful, wonderful work in his lawsuit against 2 particular aspects of Prop 14. And I don't know if he's...
I haven't talked yet.
I know. I know. You haven't read my mind. I don't know if he's going to ask for money, but I'm going to ask that you can think about some money for him on his behalf, because he is spending thousands of dollars out of his own pocket on his lawsuit, and it's getting to be a problem. The state is doing everything they can to make his lawsuit more expensive, like trying to depose Mike Chamness, and that costs a lot of money, and I spoke 2 weeks ago to the Libertarian Party State Convention at South Lake Tahoe, and I asked for contributions. And I was really, I never in my life made a pitch for money. I just haven't been much of an organization person. And I was just bowled over when those 40 libertarians in the room came up with $675. So you can say, oh, libertarians have more money, and I won't argue. Nevertheless, people really opened up their hearts to him, and maybe you can think about that. So he's going to talk about his lawsuits against two particular aspects of the California Top Two system. So I'm just going to take 5 minutes to explain the Washington State lawsuit against the very essence of the Top Two system. It's been going on in Washington State since 2004, ever since the voters of Washington State passed the Top Two system. And at first, that case had very good luck. It won in U.S. District Court in 2005 in the summer. The U.S. District Court said the Top Two concept violates the First Amendment. The First Amendment really has four things in it, or five if you count press. Everybody knows about free speech, and everybody knows about religious freedom. And people tend not to overlook the part of the First Amendment that guarantees freedom of association. That says that groups have a First Amendment right to basically run their own organizations as they see fit, and certainly to control who's a member. And because of the First Amendment, the old Washington and California blanket primaries were declared unconstitutional. The old blanket primary had been passed in Washington State in 1934 and in California by the voters in 1996. The old blanket primary said everybody gets a primary ballot. It's the same for every voter. Every candidate is listed on it. And the top vote getter from each party advances to the November election. If you've been in California in the 90s, you might remember. We had it in 1998 and 2000. And the truth was, it really didn't hurt minor parties at all, because minor parties almost never have contested primaries. So, one green gets on the primary ballot. Doesn't matter how many or few votes he or she gets. That green is on the November ballot. But the major parties didn't like it, and they had a point. In effect, all the voters were helping those parties choose their nominees instead of the party's members, and they said that violates freedom of association. And the Supreme Court agreed. So out went the blanket primary in California, out went the blanket primary in Washington. I could say that was sad. We don't know what the future's going to be. It might have been a colossal mistake, because then what happened? In Washington State, the supporters of the old blanket primary says, all right, we'll fix you. You say it's no good to have outsiders help pick the nominees of a party. All right, we'll just rewrite this law, and we'll say parties don't have nominees anymore. Now, if they'd been really philosophically fair and consistent, they should have just said, we don't like parties, which they don't, and they said, we'll just have nonpartisan elections with no party labels on the ballot. But people want party labels on the ballot. Polls have shown people can't stand the idea that we're going to have congressional and state office elections with no party labels on the ballot. The public depends on those labels. So anyway, LaGrange passed this made-up system where they don't print the party labels like normally. They put, I prefer the Democratic Party, or I prefer the Green Party. It's all a fake. It's a game. They say, see, parties don't have nominees, so what's the problem? Well, so Washington got this dumb system first, 2004, but in 2005, the U.S. District Court threw it out. He said, well, as long as you have party labels on the ballot and the people using those labels were not picked by the party, it's got the same flaw as the blanket primary. So then it went to the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit agreed. Then it went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And at the oral argument in 2007, every justice who talked, which is 8 of the 9, as Clarence Thomas is famous for never saying a word in oral argument, all 8 justices said things that made it obvious they thought that this blanket primary was no good either. It had the same flaw. Did I say, I meant to say top two primary. Everybody walked out of that hearing being 100% persuaded the U.S. Supreme Court was going to throw it out. But it didn't. It was a shock. In March 2008, Clarence Thomas wrote it. He doesn't like parties. Somehow, in the conference after the hearing, he persuaded all the justices but two to say, well, we don't really know enough about this system yet. Washington State hasn't even figured out what labels are going to be on the ballot. So how can we throw it out now? Let's just say, well, for now, we don't see anything necessarily wrong with it, and then we'll send it back to the lower courts after it's been tried, and they can figure out if it's unconstitutional or not. Well, the newspapers in Washington and California, they virtually all love the top two system. They all endorsed it. They all said, oh, Supreme Court upholds it. It's over. Done with. And so the case in Washington is not over. It's the same old case that was filed in 2004. So it went back to the U.S. District Court, and the parties put up a lot of scholarly evidence. They did experiments, social science experiments, and they showed people the ballot, which by then Washington State had figured it out what it would say. And they said, well, did you look at this ballot and look at all this stuff, verbiage on it? Do you think these candidates are endorsed by the party, and do you think these candidates are members of the party? Because they do have the party name. And about half the vote, the people, said yes to one of those questions. And the state didn't put up any evidence against it. So then the U.S. District Court scheduled a hearing, a trial, and all the experts was going to testify. And then he canceled the hearing a week before and upheld it without listening to the evidence. And as far as the written evidence, he said, well, I think it doesn't matter what the stupid people think. It just matters what the well-informed people think. And the well-informed people would understand it, so therefore I uphold it. So now it's in the Ninth Circuit, so that's where it is now. Oh, no, I'm done. But do people want to ask me questions?
Yeah, Robbie, before we go, let's clear the cups just for the visuals.
Ah, the visuals.
Yeah. I definitely just got Richard's head there while you were eating, so you won't be on the internet eating bacon.
Can you hear me?
Not very well.
Maybe we should switch places. This is, you don't have to hold this one.
We'll do a switcheroo.
And before I start acting formally, I have a few questions. I'm going to turn over myself and wipe out. Yeah. That part of the
entertainment. Oh, we're back to this one?
How's this?
Oh, wow.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank Richard. I mean, this guy is a walking encyclopedia. You name any part of election law, he'll be able to tell you stuff going back to, I don't know, 1658 probably. Or 48, maybe the Cromwell Revolution.
1492?
Maybe that too. But my name is Gautam Dutta. Thanks for having me here. I'm an attorney who is working on a couple of cases involving Prop 14. But before I even go there, first I want to thank Mike Feinstein for inviting me to come here and speak. And I'll just cut to the chase. Last June, so almost a year ago, California voters were what I call hoodwinked. They thought they were getting reform by voting for Prop 14. But little did they know that they kind of bought into this a buy one, get one free situation. Namely, they thought that they were getting reform, and it looked, you know, on the surface, Prop 14 looked somewhat attractive, you know, change the way the system is right now. It is dysfunctional. I think we can all agree on that. But the problem was the so-called fix, because what was not on the ballot was that if folks voted for Prop 14, they would also be stuck with another law the legislature had conveniently passed in the middle of the night a couple of years earlier. That was called Senate Bill 6. Technically, Senate Bill 6 is an implementing law. So in other words, if Prop 14 is the table, SB 6 are the legs. So you can't have one without the other. All right, so what did SB 6 do? For that, we're going to first switch over to those slides that are passing through. As you see, California has a few special elections, right? On average, we have, believe it or not, at least 4.8 special elections, that is for Congress, for state office, for assembly, or for state senate every year. And, well, we've already had, by the end of July, we will have had four special elections, by my count. Yeah, see, Assembly District 4, Senate District 28, Congressional District 36, Assembly District 4. SD 17. Yeah, so we've had four, arguably five if you count one election that was a holdover from last year. Anyway, the point is we have a lot of special elections. There is one going on right now, and that's what I'm passing out. Essentially, this is an election in Senate District, in Assembly District 4. And I think we have someone from El Dorado County here, right? Yeah, Mr. Bornstein there. Yes, and I forgot your first name, so that's why I'm being so formal. Michael. A lot of Michaels here. There is a special election this coming Tuesday. It's a round two. It's a general election, or what was now called a runoff election. So as you probably saw from the ballot, it looks. What does it look like? Here, can someone give me, let's see, where is... Yeah, let's use the green one, of course. So here's a bit of show and tell. So what we have here is the sample ballot from Placer County, and it says that the two people who are listed are Dennis Campanelli. It says, my party preference is the Democratic Party. And number two, it says, Beth Gaines, my party preference is the Republican Party. Oh, by the way, like under the caption there, I love it, there's a typo. It says, small business woman. I'm not making this up. It's interesting. Anyway, I'm making no political commentary. It's just, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I know she is the wife of a current state senator, but I don't know about anything else. Anyway, and then finally, there is a slot that says, write-in, right? Okay. What does it look like? Can you vote? Do you think you can vote for write-in here?
No, you can write it in.
Oh, some of you know the answer, you peed. Too well informed. What is this? What's this? Anyway, so here's that's one of the big problems here. Seriously, if I were to write in the name of, I don't know, Richard Winger or someone, let's see, let's put in, well, okay, let's pretend Richard Winger was written in here, okay, because we're in the Green Party and, you know, you want to make sure that we don't waste paper and kill trees. So, if we wrote in Richard Winger here, what would happen? Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. I mean, this vote would not be counted. That is the new law that we have right now. Well, it's part of Prop 14. This is Senate Bill 6, the part that we are not allowed to see on the ballot. And it's slightly problematic, to say the least, forgetting legalese. I mean, it's a big problem. I mean, a lot of people want alternatives. For example, it's not even a party thing. Look up in Alaska. Lisa Murkowski, last year, lost the Republican primary in 2010. But what happened? She ran as a write-in candidate without a party label and won. She was reelected in 2010. Or, you know, look closer to home, Tom Amiano. About a decade back, he ran for mayor, and a little more than a decade back, he ran for mayor again, and what happened was that he finished second to Willie Brown. So he made it to the runoff as a write-in candidate. Or look further south. I used to live in L.A. myself, in Long Beach. You had a former Long Beach councilwoman by the name of Tanya Reyes Uranga. She was running for a third term, and in a quirk in Long Beach, if you want to run for anything past the second term, you have to run as a write-in candidate in the first round. And if you make it, then you get to be on the ballot in the second round. Well, she made it on the ballot as a write-in candidate. She didn't win, but she made it to round two as a write-in candidate. This is not some abstraction of people voting for Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. It's serious stuff. People want options on the ballot. Not to mention that if you had a situation last year, let's pretend Prop 14 and Prop 2 had been in effect. If, let's say, Jerry Brown had gotten a stroke or something horrible like that, you know, about a week before the election, what would have happened? Actually, under Prop 14's rules, you know, basically the Democratic Party would not have been able to replace Brown, and folks would have been stuck between a rock and a hard place. What do you do? You have, you know, Jerry Brown and you have Meg Whitman. Again, without making any political commentary, the issue is that vote, you know, the choices would have been much more limited. So anyway, I kind of think that write-in voting is somewhat important, to say the least, and it's very disturbing to see a law take away that option. Now, one thing I want to make clear, it's okay to ban write-in voting. What I mean by that is it's okay under state law to get rid of that write-in slot. So basically, I can't even pretend you cover up this write-in part. That's allowed because – essentially the rules are clear. You know, you can only have two choices. I personally don't like it, but that's, you know, sometimes what's legal, it may not be what you like, obviously. So that's one thing that the state could have done. But no, they got too cute by half. They basically wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to tell the voters, they being Governor Schwarzenegger's forces, the California Chamber of Commerce, and those folks, they wanted to tell the voters that they weren't getting rid of write-in voting. So what do you do? You're right. They didn't get rid of write-in voting. They just got rid of the value of your vote. They just disenfranchised you. That is SB 6. Okay, so Senate Bill 6 has two things, a good segue. One is, it has a whole bunch of provisions. It basically is the infrastructure or the building blocks for Prop 14, because Prop 14 lists a bunch of principles, so SB 6 gives you the dirty nitty-gritty. So the two parts, Richard's already talked about Prop 14 indirectly. It's basically Washington's top two system with the two changes I'm talking about here. So the big picture is this. Basically, you get rid of party primaries. Everybody runs in a jungle primary against each other in June, in a June election. And then the top two, regardless of party, go on to the general or so-called runoff election in November. So that's the big framework that Prop 14 set up. But the catch is that there are a few details that weren't on the ballot that SB 6 had. These, mind you, are not in the Washington state system. This is California specific. And those are the only things that we are concentrating on in our lawsuit here. We're not talking about the big picture because, frankly, that is under litigation now. It's going to continue to be litigated for probably another 2-3 years. We're not talking about that part of it. But so what we're talking about are two things. One is the right to cast a write-in ballot and have it counted. That's number one. Number two is the right of candidates from smaller parties to be able to say on the ballot what they stand for. So that's the second piece of our lawsuit. So a few of you may know Mike Chamis. He has been he's from L.A. and Venice, and he's a two-time candidate now for the state Senate, Senate District 28. There was a special election just a couple months back. And more recently for an upcoming election in Congressional District 36. So there's the seat that was once held by Jane Harman. Here's the situation. Until January 1st, for over 100 years, California candidates who were from smaller parties were allowed, that is, not Democratic, not Republican, not one of the six ballot qualifies, they were allowed to say that they were, quote, independent. You know, so that was the rule. So, yeah, you weren't able to say that you're from the coffee party, tea party, but you were at least able to say you're independent, which, you know, kind of, we'll talk about, which, you know, has its own meaning or value. Here's what SB 6 now says for the new rules. It basically gets rid of that right. So you no longer have the ability to say that you're independent if you're from one of the smaller parties. Instead, it forces you to say that you have, quote, no party preference. So let me just go. What do you think? I mean, this is on scientific poll.
Say what SB6 says. I don't get it yet. You haven't stated SB6 says.
It says two things. It says two things. I mean, for our purposes here, like number one, it basically implements Prop 14, so it kicks Prop 14 into effect. Number one. And there are two other things to it. Number two, it says that it bans write-in votes from being counted. So that's one big thing. Number two is that it forces people from small parties to say they have no party preference when before... A party that is not ballot qualified. Right now there are six ballot qualified parties. For now, yes. But here's the kicker. As a lot of you probably know, to stay on the ballot, a ballot qualified party must get at least 2% of the vote in a governor's election, right? It's one of the ways. I mean, but that's the biggest, easiest way to stay on the ballot. Okay. Yeah, during any statewide constitutional race during a governor's, during a gubernatorial election year. To be more specific. Thank you.
John, hold on. I hadn't said this beginning. I really hope that we could use this videotape for YouTube. And each time we're getting stuff from the audience, I understand we're trying to be clarifying, but things that aren't going to be heard. This is continually getting, you know, in a way that just is going to be unintelligible for people who are watching it. And there's only 20 or 30 of us in the room, and when we talk to the CCWG college and with these folks, that we'd be able to come up with a propaganda thing that we can throw on YouTube. So I just want to ask people now, and I'm sorry I didn't say it before, try and let them go.
save the questions for later. It'll just be easier to understand when somebody's watching it online.
By the way, thanks for all the questions. This definitely helps me focus this as well, because I want to make sure that I'm being very, very clear. So essentially, there are two things and two rights that SB 6 directly eliminates. One is the right to cast a vote, a write-in vote that counts, number one. Number two, the right of anyone from a non-ballot qualified party to state their party affiliation. Why is this important even for a party that isn't ballot qualified? Well, down the road, it might be possible that under this new system, a party that's currently ballot qualified might not make the top two. Then what? Well, the next gubernatorial election year is 2014, right? So if a party such as Green, Libertarian, Peace, Freedom, whatever have you, if none of its candidates in that year in a statewide election make it to the general election, then unless you can get a lot of signatures, that party will be kicked off the ballot. So this is no real abstract issue, number one. Number two, I think we should all care about the rights of candidates who aren't, quote, mainstream, that don't have, you know, the status, don't have the powers that be behind them. I think it's really important that no one's voice, I for one think it's important that no one's voice be silenced. So that's the situation that we have here, these two issues. Now, what happens if our lawsuit prevails? Essentially, Prop 14 will be put on hold. So let me be very clear about one thing. We're not challenging in this lawsuit the constitutionality of Proposition 14. That issue is being litigated in Washington State right now. That's going to take a while, and the courts are on it, and it'll be resolved in due course. What we're going for here are two provisions or two parts of Senate Bill 6 that are just outrageous, for lack of any other word. You know, it's ridiculous. It's outrageous. It's an outrage when you invite voters to vote for a write-in candidate and then not count their vote. I mean, there's no warning anywhere that says that if you vote for a write-in candidate, your vote will be thrown out. I don't see it here, unless I can't read, which is possible. But, you know, there is just no warning there. It's flat out, you know, a due process violation, you know, and really affects and damages everybody's fundamental right to vote. So number one. Number two, it's a huge problem when candidates are not allowed to tell voters on the ballot, which Justice Rehnquist said is the last thing a voter sees before he makes a decision, before he makes his choice, you know, to see what a voter stands for. Because, you know, that's the question I had for you. Like, when you see no party preference, is that to you the same thing as independent? I'm just curious. Obviously, I'm a little biased. Yeah, that's different from, decline to state is different from no party preference. Because one of the defenses that the Secretary of State Deborah Bowen is using is that, hey, they're almost the same thing. You have no right to say you're independent. Never mind that they're, you know, I'm not going to dig into the weeds of the legal issues, but there is a strong right and strong legal precedent for using the words independent. But basically they're saying that there's no difference. That, you know, if you say no party preference, that's the same thing as independent. I don't think so. I think there's a complete difference of meaning, which raises the question, if that was the case, why'd they get rid of it anyway? You know, that's kind of a curious question. So that's what our lawsuit here is about. And one thing, I wanted to give you an update of where that is. And we have two lawsuits right now. And one is in state court. It's in the State Court of Appeals here in San Francisco. And actually, Richard is one of our plaintiffs in that case. And then we have another federal case in Los Angeles. Essentially, our worthy opponents are trying to play a stall game right now. They're trying to delay the federal case because they say they need discovery. Frankly, I don't think they need any discovery. The issues are rather clear. I mean, what they're saying essentially is that we need to find out whether Mike Chaminis, what his relationship with the Coffee Party is. Basically, Mike Chaminis is running as a candidate from the Coffee Party, which is a sort of a counterparty, a counter-movement to the Tea Party. But, you know, here's the problem with that argument. Under the new law, Senate Bill 6, all you have to do is just say, you know, change your party registration, and that's all it takes. You don't have to show that you have ties to any party. Also, Mike Chemis has gone to coffee party meetings anyway, but what Senate Bill 6 says is that, okay, what is the party that you're registered with right as you're taking out your candidate paper? So in other words, I could be a Tea Party member today and go to take out candidacy filing papers tomorrow and change from Tea Party to Democratic Party. And guess what the ballot's going to say? This one here. It's going to say my party preference is the Democratic Party. See, basically it takes the SB6 gets rid of what we call the sore, you know, Richard doesn't like this term, the sore loser rule.
Duration of membership.
Yeah, in other words, you know, under normal, under, for special elections, I think you have to have been with the same party for, I think, the old rules were 60 days, 3 months, 90, yeah, 1 year for normal elections, 3 months or 90 days for special elections. So with that, it's all out the window. So now, like, I could switch from Tea Party to Democratic Party just tomorrow, and I'd be listed on the ballot as a as saying that my party's preference is the Democratic Party. So that's just to give you background. And so now the Secretary of State's defense is that, well, we don't know, basically, is we don't know if Mike Chemis really belongs to the Coffee Party. Well, the fact it's a fact that his voter registration, his form, states that he identifies with the Coffee Party. So essentially, I can only see this as a stall, as a way to try to stall out these proceedings, because, you know, the time is always on the government side. You know, they want to make sure that grassroots candidates, that grassroots efforts and campaigns, you know, are bled out and, you know, and suffer thousands of cuts. So we're going to do our part to fight this lawsuit, prosecute this lawsuit, and we're doing quite well. But, you know, it will need, we always could use help. And, you know, Richard was kind enough to mention that, you know, it's cost a little bit of money. Actually, it's funny. This lawsuit has been a bargain, quote unquote. What I mean by that is that, you know, frequently if you go to court for anything, the automatic cost is $25,000, $50,000 upwards, right? I don't think we've, I think we spent this lawsuit, you know, it's spent, we've not even spent $25,000, it's been less than that. But, you know, we could always use your support because it's not cheap. And, you know, $25,000 to all of us, that's a big money. I don't know about you. I mean, to some folks like the California Chamber, that might be a lot of money. But, you know, it's something to us. And if you can help out in any way, whatever amount, we'd really appreciate it. So with that, I think I should let me just stop here and take questions because I know that you have a lot of questions.
One more presenter.
Oh, sure.
So Michael Rubin, do you want to come up and make your presentation?
Thank you.
Well, I'm also going to talk about a lawsuit. For those of you who are at the CC meeting, I passed out a memorandum from Dan Siegel. The gist of this is that Dan Siegel, the people may know as a civil rights attorney in Oakland, has agreed to do a frontal assault on Proposition 14 on First Amendment grounds. I have here a memo which I will pass out when I'm done. From him indicating some of his initial research. And, but what I really want to talk about are the issues here. I think that our strongest attack on this is First Amendment. I believe that Proposition 14 interferes with my right to petition the government in a method that we wish to by organizing a political party and have it represented on the ballot. It clearly is, in my view, a First Amendment issue. The other thing that we want to talk about is that In the memo, Dan takes up the question of the Washington case. The Washington case, initially, Supreme Court decision on the Washington case was, in his view, decided on very narrow grounds. And he strongly believes that a First Amendment challenge could be successful. Now, there's some issues here that we haven't decided on, and we will be talking further about. One of them is the plaintiffs, the question of who should be the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. The question of court of jurisdiction is still yet to be decided. The question of whether we're going to go to the federal courts or to the state courts or both or has yet to be decided. So there's still considerable work to do. The other thing I also wanted to mention, of course, is the question of money. Now, if when you see the memo, if you have not already seen it, the Siegel Law Firm believes that $15,000 is about what it would cost to for the first round. I have pledged $5,000 to this effort, and I'm hoping that other people will take this up, and obviously fundraising is, in fact, in order. So people are on notice. I think we lost the mic. No, it's still working? Okay. Okay. Anyway, let me just look at my notes here, see if there's anything else that I should say. We also took up the question of one of the unintended consequences of Proposition 14, I assume it's unintended, but one never knows, is that because a small party is unlikely to ever be on a gubernatorial ballot under these laws for the foreseeable future, it takes away one of the ways that small parties continue to remain on the ballot. And that will also be, you know, an issue in this lawsuit. That is, the question of the 2% rule is just thrown out the window. Whether they intended it or not is unclear to me, but that's also an issue that will be taken up in the lawsuit. I think that's...
Okay, so what we're...
Let me just say, I only have 20 of these. I didn't realize we had such a big group. And some, as I say, some of you got this Friday night at the CC meeting, so please do not take another 20.
So what we're going to do next is we're going to take a stack, I guess, at this microphone over there, but it should probably be turned in the other direction. And we're going to have people ask brief questions, and after the questions are done... we'll ask the speakers to respond collectively. So I'm asking people to get in a stack, in a line, and I'm going to give the microphone to Jane and let her close the stack.
Not in front of the speaker, can we move back a little?
Yes, Matt Leslie. All right, is everybody on in the stack that needs to ask a question? And Randy or Kamran, which one of you is the last one? Randy? And okay, we'll finish off with the lady. So, okay, stack is closed now, and please.
Gloria Purcell, San Mateo County, I'm familiar with the issue, and thank you both for coming. I'm just so pleased to see you here, and I would like to know a name and address to write the check to. Okay, so... I don't know if you... Yes, do you want to do this?
Sure.
Mike said that this was going on YouTube. Do you want your name and address on? Okay.
Okay. So the address is, my first name is Gautam, G-A-U-T-A-M. I didn't give it for your notes, so I apologize. So it's G as in George, A-U, T as in Tom, A, M as in Mary, so G-A-U-T-A-M. And the last name is Dutta, D as in David, U-T-T-A. So that's, and my first name is from Buddha's name, but
yeah.
I don't claim to be divine. Wish I were.
Where check made out to for your lawsuit?
Oh, for my lawsuit? Yeah, this is not going on camera.
No.
All right, so you can say, for simplicity, Gautam Dutta, attorney at law. It's our case here. And our address is 39270 Paseo Padre Parkway. So Paseo, P-A-S-E-O, Padre, P-A-D-R-E, Parkway. So 39270 Paseo Padre Parkway, unit number 206. And the city's Fremont, F-R-E-M-O-N-T, and the zip is 94538. 94538. Fremont, California, 94538.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Jim Stauffer, Santa Clara County. Besides this lawsuit, there's other things that the Green Party and other organizations could be doing. And, you know, the opportunity to promote ranked choice voting by the strategy. There's been a strategy some people have been talking about, eliminate the primary altogether, take this big, huge, nonpartisan election and move it to the general and use, you know, instant runoff voting, which, you know, would be advantageous to minor parties. And that will come along if we can show that Prop 14 is not working the way the proponents said it would, which was to elect more moderate candidates. And the mechanism, the two mechanisms that they're counting on for that to happen are a crossover voting where, you know, moderate Republicans are going to vote for a Democrat or moderate Democrats will vote for a Republican, and increased turnout in the primary. Now, we can look at statistics and get turnout information, but since it's a nonpartisan election now, determining crossover voting is going to be very difficult. I mean, I guess it would have to be done with, like, exit polling. And I was wondering if you know if, like, the PPIC or any of those organizations are going to be looking at this, or is there something we could do to maybe write to, like, the PPIC and say, hey, wouldn't this be an interesting project for you guys, or, you know, what do you think of a way to sort of attack it from that angle, you know, proving that Prop 14 didn't work as advertised?
Linda Piera Avila, P-I-E-R-A hyphen A-V-I-L-A, Los Angeles County. And my question is, how will the running of candidates by the smaller parties in the next few election cycles assist in your lawsuits?
I'm Shane Cuhey, Los Angeles County. I would like to know whether the other way of qualifying for the ballot, that is 1% of the popular vote from the previous statewide election, is affected by Senate Bill 6.
The short answer is no, that's not changed. But it has to be from the general election.
Yeah. Two questions about SB 6. One is, Joan Strasser, Alameda County. One is, it's hard for me to picture it saying literally, votes, write-in votes will be permitted, however, will not be counted. I can't picture anything saying something like that. If that's actually what it says, I want to clarify it. And the second is, I don't understand about non-ballot qualified candidates, because I thought the whole point of being able to get on with your party is that you qualify. And if, in fact, you can be on the ballot with your party without qualifying, what would be the essence of qualification? So I'm confused about both aspects of SB6, and I'd like them to be clarified. Thanks.
Randy Hicks of Sacramento County. Now, SB 6, was that a bill that was passed, or that was a bill that was passed and signed into law? And so there's a code, there's an under elections code, right? So this is in the elections code. So in order to repeal this, you do have to go to the court. My question is, what's been the sense of the Ninth Circuit? What's been the sense of the Ninth Circuit about your lawsuit? Have they, when they looked into this, have you gotten something favorable? Have you gotten unfavorable? And the other question is, it seems to me that if you can prove that it's unconstitutional and they have to throw it out, what will they do? What do you think they'll do, and what will you do after they remove it?
All right, so I'll start with Randy because he brought an interesting point up, how SB 6 was passed. Essentially, this is a bill that was passed in the middle of the night between what I call the business hours of 3:40 a.m. and 6:55 a.m. It was passed without any hearings, did not go through any committees. In fact, if it had gone through any the elections committee, I'm willing to bet that the two provisions that we're challenging now may not have been there. So committees, they sometimes... they have their issues, but sometimes they do. There's a process, and they do a good job. They vet things, and they, you know, they sometimes can troubleshoot a lot of things. So it was passed in the dead of the night. No one knew about it, and the voters never knew about it a year later when they're voting on Proposition 14. So how a bill is passed actually matters. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court has mentioned that, you know, if a law has been passed without any deliberation, they're not going to be giving that as much deference, if any deference there. That was a decision by, you know, Justice Breyer, a concurring opinion by Justice Breyer on that, who's still, of course, on the court. So that's quite important. Now, you know, as I mentioned, our case is not against Prop 14. Our case is against two important pillars of Prop 14, what holds up the table that we call Prop 14. Now, what happens if our case wins? Essentially, I'm not going to go into the nitty-gritty details, but essentially, Prop 14 would have to be put on hold, and the legislature would have a few choices. It could start over and just fix the problems that we mentioned, and so in that way, Prop 14 would immediately take effect after they fix it. That's one option. Number two, they could look into other options as well. It would be the ball would completely be in the legislature's court. But the bottom line is that Prop 14 would be put on hold indefinitely until it was fixed. And, you know, as we've seen, legislatures, if they want to, as we saw with Senate Bill 6, they can act rather quickly. Yeah. You know, they can act in 3 hours. So if this is something that they wanted to fix, they could fix rather easily. And then, as I've said in court, you know, we would go home because that's what this lawsuit's aiming to do, fix the worst parts of it. But, you know, again, all options would be with the legislature, and obviously it would be up to folks to tell their lawmakers what they would want, how they would want them to handle this. We think we have a very strong case. Obviously, we're a little biased on this, but what I can tell you is this. There is number one, the right to count a vote that is cast. That is something that is just fundamental. I mean, you can go back to Reynolds v. Sims, or there are a few cases before that, and even cases going forward that say that. In fact, a couple of months ago in Washington, D.C., a federal court said that made it clear that if you cast a write-in vote, you know, it has to be counted. So that's rather strong. Now, I want to turn to a point raised by Joan, because it's a good question. So she was saying, you know, where does it say in SB 6 that you have this loopy situation where you can, you know, vote for a write-in candidate but then not count? Well, this is what's interesting. This is where essentially they're pulling a fast one, to use a legal term. You know, what they're doing is this. I mean, the current elections code says that voters have a right to cast a write-in ballot in every single state and federal election, period. Senate Bill 6 did not change that. It did not amend that. In fact, it made 60 amendments to the elections code, but it didn't touch that. So that's point one. Point two is that Senate Bill 6 also passed a new part of the law, a new addition to the elections code, Section 8606. It basically says, to paraphrase, any vote that is cast for a write-in candidate shall not be counted. I think it's rather clear what that's saying. You know, you're allowed to vote for a write-in candidate, but if you do, sorry, you're out of luck. Vote hits the waste basket, or hopefully the recycling bin. But that's it. So that's where you have this really anomalous and really outrageous situation where voters are basically invited to throw their votes away.
So that's essentially what we have here. So that's responding to the one part of Joan's question. The other is, okay, why should I care about this? Why should I care about the rights of someone who isn't from from a ballot qualified party? You know, the answer is simple. This is about free speech. It's about the First Amendment. You know, if I'm from the coffee party, the tea party, you know, at one point, I think in Poland now, even now, there's a beer drinkers party. You know, if I'm from any party, even if it's a small one, I have a right to say what I believe in. Now, the state does, it's not an unlimited right. Like, you know, 24 states allow you to say exactly, like in Washington, like what party you're from. Even, you know, whether it be the smallest of parties, it could be, you know, tea party, coffee party, beer drinker, whatever. In Washington, for example, as long as you say what you stand for in 16 characters or less and it's not obscene, they let you say it. 16 characters. So it's kind of, you know, you have to play a little bit of game there. But at least they let you say that. But not so in the state of California, in the Bear Flag Republic. You know, here, the new rule is that you no longer get to even say you're independent. You know, that was the old rule. Like, in fact, you had a candidate by the last name of Iglesias in this congressional election in from Orange County just last November, who ran as an independent. That's out the window now. Now everyone's going to have to say, if they don't want to be with one of the ballot-qualified parties, that they have, quote, no party preference. That's just an outright lie. People stand for something. No party preference means you stand for nothing. And that's why that's fundamentally wrong and unconstitutional. So that's the reason why we have, it's a serious legal issue and one that the Ninth Circuit actually has talked about already. I mean, they actually have said explicitly in a previous case from 2002, actually it's from my city of Santa Monica originally, it's Rubin versus Santa Monica. There they talked about a case from Ohio and basically mentioned that, you know, if the Democrats are allowed to say what party they're from, if Republicans are allowed to say what party you're from, then certainly there is a right for a candidate to say that they're, quote, independent. So we are pretty confident that the Ninth Circuit would agree with us, but, you know, that's a few months down the road. But the legal precedent is rather strong. Now, to Linda's question, you know, how does the running of candidates help our case? It's a good question because, in fact, that question has Michael Chamness written all over it. Essentially, as we mentioned before, you know, as Richard mentioned before, with the top two litigation, the U.S. Supreme Court is now taking constitutional challenges. How shall we put it? Like, they're basically trying to make constitutional challenges a little harder to bring. Let's put it that way. Because what they're saying is, look, it's not enough to tell us that this law is horrible. Prove it to us. So how do you prove it? Well, you got to run candidates, and they've got to suffer constitutional harm. And then you go to the court and say, look, you don't have to guess anymore about what this law is going to do. Here's what happened. And that's what happened here. Michael Chamness, he's run twice now. You know, and in Senate District 28, there's a special election in L.A. County. And more recently, coming up, you know, in a few weeks, is the election in Congressional District 36, which is a lot of South Bay in L.A. County. And in both those cases, Mike is being forced to say and lie to voters that he has, quote, no party preference. So once those, having gone through those elections as a candidate, and mind you, as you know, it's not easy to become a candidate. You know, you have to first, unless you can collect 3,000 signatures in literally a matter of days, which I think is ridiculous, you have to plunk down, in case of the congressional election, $1,740, you know, to qualify as a candidate. And here's another part that is actually ridiculous. The trial court is a little skeptical about our claims, to put it mildly. And when we asked for a preliminary injunction, the trial court said no. And here's what the reason they gave. Basically, they said that, oh, it doesn't matter if you're not allowed to say you have no party preference. You know why? Because you could say what you want in the sample ballot, in the pamphlet booklet. Does anyone know how much it costs?
Yeah, $4,800, depending on the district.
Yeah. In fact, for congressional elections, it could cost up to 48-some thousand bucks, depending if you want Spanish and if you want to have a couple of pages or not. And in the state Senate election, the top price was $64,000. Now, is that an option? You know, free speech at costing $64,000? You know, again, I think the Ninth Circuit may have a different take on that. So finally, to go back to Jim Stauffer's point, which is a really valuable one, which is, you know, ranked choice voting. Obviously, you know, we recently had elections here in Berkeley
first time with ranked choice voting, and we also had it in Oakland for the first time. And something that's dear to my heart as a former deputy political director of New America Foundation. You know, a lot of you probably know Steve Hill. You know, he's done phenomenal work there. So we want to, I for one, you know, hope that ranked choice voting continues to spread. And I think, you know, we have a foundation here. People, I think, in L.A. and other places are waiting to see how this plays out, especially in the upcoming mayoral election. But to going back to our case, it's always good to, you know, get people thinking. I mean, that's one thing that lawsuits do. I mean, I think we have a very strong case. But, you know, the more cases that are out there on a particular issue, in a sense, the better, because it forces folks to think. Because as we all know, we're all busy as heck. You know, we have so many things to do, but if you have a legal case or you have some other election that come up, I think for the most part, it's a good thing because it focuses attention on the issue. And the last point is, what's the track record of Prop 14? Well, in Washington State, it hasn't really resulted in, say, two Democrats making the runoff or two Republicans making the runoff. In fact, that's happened in only about 2% of the election, roughly about 2-3% of the elections over there. So if the thinking is that this would result in, quote, more moderates running, I'm not sure that is the case. And also the question is, is it really effective? You know, so we'll have to see about that. Again, our case is not about, you know, the challenging Prop 14, the idea. It's about challenging two parts that are of the implementing law, Senate Bill 6, that are just outrageous. But, I think I'll stop there.
Thank you.
I know our time is getting short here, but I just wanted to say to Linda's question about running candidates, it's hugely important that all of us run for office in 2012, even though the odds that the Green will be in one of the top two positions is very low. Unfortunately, in Washington State, minor parties have just quit running candidates, and that's terrible because we need to have attempts to gather evidence. Now, I have an affidavit in the Washington State case. There have been 775 instances in the country where either a blanket primary or a top two primary was held at which a minor party member ran, and at least two major party people ran. That's 755 examples. There's only two examples where a minor party person placed first or second if there were at least two major party people running. I know the big free weekly in Alameda County, what's it called?
Express.
They endorsed Prop 14. They swallowed this line, oh, this is good for minor parties. You'll get in the top two. No, the evidence contradicts it. But we had one Green, I think, in 2008 run in Washington State, and zero in 2010. Because people don't want to pay the filing fee. Same with the Libertarians. Only one in 2008, zero in 2010. That's not good. But that is what Top 2 does. It stabs everybody's morale. And I know Joan wanted us to read the sentence in SB 6. And I'm sorry, I don't think either one of us brought it. Well, it's not worth it. He paraphrased it pretty well.
There's one really important point you brought up about candidates running, the change in the filing fee. It used to be that we could get 150 signatures, and how many signatures now for therefore the law?
1,500 for assembly, 3,000 for state senate or U.S. House. It's another dirty trick because of clumsy wording. It's just an accident. It's disgusting.
And mind you, the Secretary of State has got some leeway in interpreting these, but unfortunately, let's put it this way, they were interpreted that way.
She always rules unfair. You know, people down there where she's running for Congress think she's some sort of a reformer. She used to be. She isn't anymore. Yes. She has made all sorts of rulings that have been hostile. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Not at all. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was a well worthwhile. I've been passing the hat in the back, but I didn't want to do it with the camera going and everything. So if anybody wants to contribute to this lawsuit and to the progress of it, please give me money now.
Okay, so where we are on the schedule and time, right now it's 10:20, and we're 10 minutes behind schedule, and we have two things we need to take. Shane, would you be in agreement to take 5 minutes off of platform? Make up for lost time?
Probably.
Thank you. And then we're also with the co-coordinators of the working groups be willing to take 5 minutes off of the first breakout session. See no objections. We'll assume that because we're already short 10 minutes. We're also going to need to find a time to fit in the election discussion, the gym election discussion, but we're going to have to handle that at a later time. Okay. And how much time do we want to give for that?
Jim and Barry, is 10 minutes going to be enough to present a clear proposal and go through the consensus process on it?
Okay, so we're going to schedule that for 11:05 unless we get some more time back.
All right, Shane or someone else from platform, please come up and begin the volume of the
Good morning, everyone. There are two platform planks, and the very first one that we're going to be looking at is the people with disabilities plank. Ever since the packet appeared, there have been some comments in that which have led to changes. So I will go through the changes that I think are reasonable, and I'll do that right now. In background and purpose, in the third paragraph, in the third last line, delete retardation in quotation marks. In the last paragraph, members of, which should have been crossed out in the actual original, wasn't crossed out. So all of those members of phrases are deleted. For example, instead of as members of California's people with disabilities have the same legal rights guaranteed all other individuals by the Constitution, etc., we'll say as California's people with disabilities have the same legal rights, because members was deleted consistently in the previous three paragraphs. So the members of in the third last line is gone. And then if you flip over the page, in the points, all the members of there also deleted. So from point 1, 2, 4, okay. Now, in point 5, in the second line, people with disabilities is deleted there because we're already talking about people with disability screening. So there's no need to have people with disabilities again. I received some feedback that people would like to retain 8 and 9, but with some changes, rather than delete them. And the proposed reinsertion of 8, I'll just read it out, support the development, funding, and implementation of programs designed to increase public awareness of, rather than sensitivity, of the needs of people with disabilities, full stop, and delete the rest of that. So that's one change. And instead of the leading number 9, support the development of policies designed to stop stereotyping people of people with disabilities, full stop. All the rest of that goes. So those are my proposed changes relative to the packet that was published.
I'm going to form a staff for clarifying questions, please.
All right, a couple minutes, a couple seconds. We want to give people a chance, if there are clarifying questions, going once, going twice. All right, and is it Randy who's... Bert's at the end. Okay, clarifying questions only. And Shane, do you want to respond to them as they're made or wait till they're all given? Okay, go ahead.
Greg Jan, Alameda County. On the second page, in number 5, starting with CRATE, a people with disabilities screening outreach, I'm not sure, you said taking out people with disabilities, but I don't understand how that reads. Could you just read the sentence?
Okay. Create a people with disabilities screening outreach program designed to assess their medical and psychiatric care benefits and services as needed.
Kent Messplace, San Diego County. Regarding number 11, I know we didn't bring this up before. We wanted some clarification as to what inclusion in parentheses means. Are we referring to a most integrated setting with supports for such people? The sentence 11 can be read a couple different ways, so if you would please help clarify that. And maybe there are some questions behind me that are similar.
Yeah. Randy Hicks with California Disability Rights. We would look under that sentence, too. We had concerns about that sentence, too, that inclusion in the most. We want the word independent in there, independent setting, because it's about independence.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to have that language in there because...
Okay, so what's your proposed change, then?
Yeah.
So, but where is the independence?
Yeah, but it says inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
It says inclusion, that independence.
So instead of inclusion, independence?
Yeah. Well, we have a problem with mainstreaming, because we have mainstreaming means not everybody's the same.
Right.
Under that. So we would like the inclusion and independence under there. Okay?
Okay. So I'll just... This is 11.
11.
So the proposed change there is end inappropriate practices of independence, in quotation marks, and support to address the unique educational needs of students with disabilities in all educational settings, including homeschooling and charter schools.
Yes, because we believe under our code, not only has to be inclusive, but they have to be able to live on their own and be able to support them.
Okay.
Under independence. Thanks.
I'll accept that. Bert?
Are we doing amendments at this point?
Okay. All right. I have an amendment.
I'm not sure whether this is a clarifying question or...
That question.
What's that?
The question.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What is... Bert Hoyer, Contra Costa County. Shane, line 26.
First page?
First page, line 26.
And
I'd like you to change the line, or I'm recommending that we change the line that says the Green Party thus demands that to it is the Green Party position that.
Okay, that's fine.
And then change the, there's a, you need a should in there at the end. Line 27 in the middle.
So it is the Green Party position that the state of California as well as the United States should work, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, that was close the staff for clarifying questions and other gray areas. So now we're asked for a staff to form for affirmations and concerns. Ask people to line up, please, now, because we're going to close the staff once it looks like it's been established.
Randy, could you know the staff must have been
All right, concerns and the affirmations, and Shane will respond to them.
Michael Rubin, Alameda County. My concern with this is people's right to institutional care, if that's what
they want.
They want.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's in there. And I went through a very wrenching situation as a union official when Agnew's Developmental Center was closed down. The people were begging to be allowed to stay, and you know, it was ridiculous that they were not allowed to stay. That some of those people had been there for years and years and years. It was the only home that they had known and were thrown out. So I believe that people and their families, depending on their condition, of course, have the right to institutional care if that's what's determined to be in their best interest.
Okay. Do you have some suggested wording?
No.
Okay.
Hi, Kendra Gonzalez, Ventura County. When I was reading this, and I may be totally wrong here, but the places where it says such people, mostly it describes, you know, people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple sections that say such people.
Where were they?
Sorry. I think it's. I lost my place here.
Well, we can undertake to.
Yeah, I just
to find those if they exist.
Yeah.
They can't.
There, such people is in there. I promise. It's only in a couple spots, but it just feels very condescending.
Okay.
To me.
We can
so,
undertake to.
Yeah, and just
sanitize.
Change it to people with disabilities consistently
yes,
throughout
right.
the document.
Well, that's what the intent was.
Okay. Thank you.
Sandra Everett, San Mateo. I don't have a concern with the way you wrote it, but the way you're suggesting the change. I mean, I think you need to use the term inclusion rather than independence, because we're talking about the school system, and inclusion is the term the school system uses. And similarly to Mike's concern about not having institutional care, but I'm a retired special education teacher, and we've taken kids who had special programs that addressed their needs, and we put them inclusion programs in the mainstream where they get to sit in the back of the room and not be able to do anything. So inclusion programs can be really problematic, and I think it's important to have the word inclusion.
Peggy Cotien, Koteen, from San Luis Obispo County. I'd just like to affirm that I like the updated version, and I'm pleased to see it. Thank you.
I wanted to clarify something here. I agree with some of the plank, but the most important part of the plank is somewhere in there you kind of mentioned the fact is that they are, that it costs, it's savings, there's savings to live independently as opposed to living in an institutional setting or a nursing home. The savings are there. It's about $1 billion. It's $1 billion to the savings by the state if somebody gets to live on their own independently with support. And that's what we're trying to say, on their own. I understand what they were trying to say is, yes, some people need to live in institutional care, but for those who don't have to, it's like they put everybody in institutional care because they don't know what to do with them. So I like some of the plank there, but I really want to make sure that you have set up that it's freedom of choice. And the other line I would like to have is money follows a person. Money follows the person. That's a line we use in CDR all the time.
Okay, at the end of this chat, we've got to know from some of the client speakers that it was 5 minutes left on the hour.
Okay, what we're going to do, we have a minimum number of delegates we have to have present in the room before starting with consensus process, so we're going to take account of delegates. Ask everybody who is a delegate to hold up your hand, and Jane will do a count.
Is anybody down the hall?
People, would you please let the facilitators deal with this process and stay calm and focus for a moment, meaning... All right. We're going to try this one more time since apparently some other people came in the room. Hold up your delegate cards. And Jane, please take a count. All right, 29, we do have quorum. Okay, we have gone through clarifying questions. We've gone through concerns. And Shane is, it's up to Shane now to address concerns, and then we'll test for consensus.
it seems to me as if the major... problem that has arisen is number 11. So this is what I propose to change. End inappropriate practices of independence and inclusion, have both, and then full stop, and then support the unique educational needs of students, so just delete to address and just say support the unique educational needs of students with disabilities in all educational settings including homeschooling and charter schools. So break it up, include both independence and inclusion. Oh, come on up. Okay. So that's what I propose for number 11. And I also propose adding the 13, support the right of institutional care if the person, as appropriate, desires that. Or desires that as appropriate. Yes.
So, of the people who expressed concerns, are there any now unresolved concerns concerning this proposal? If there are, please hold up your delegate card.
I just wanted to ask you a question. Did you add a sentence? Did you please add a sentence? Money follows the person. Under support and getting studying and all that stuff.
Yeah. What's the point of process? Yes, I think that's true. I asked for, are there any unresolved concerns? Randy, do you have a concern about the...
You mentioned it before.
Okay, are you willing to stand aside from your concern?
I'm willing to accept that as a
presentation. Okay.
Good
for me. All right, well...
It's right off the child school. In the new number 11,
any other unresolved concerns? Seeing, not seeing, and not hearing any others, then we have consensus on this proposal. And we'll move right into the next platform presentation. And Matt, just use the combined time for both platform presentations in terms of calculating your time.
So what is the time now? Oh, okay. Okay. Quite a few comments did come in on the California tax reform, and I shall go through the changes relative to the packet. It's on page 18 of the packet. In the second paragraph of background and purpose, first line, following statistics illustrate this should be 2010 to 2011 rather than 2011 to 2011. Bullet point 3 is the first addition. Tax cut on earned incomes and a higher graduated tax on unearned incomes, like, this is the additional wording, inheritances, interest, dividends, and capital gains. Just to define what unearned income is. In number 5, delete uniformly in the first sentence.
Number what?
Number 5. And then in the third last line, after float fund, put in parentheses loan, L-O-A-N. To float fund, because some people did not know what a float fund was.
Will you read the whole sentence?
Yes. So that would change adjustment of property taxes every 10 years. We support the Proposition 13 clauses that protect homeowners, especially retired elderly ones and fixed incomes, from displacement caused by increasingly higher property taxes. We support property tax exemptions for small businesses that do not make a profit by intention as non-profits or by business circumstances. We support property tax exemptions for when a homeowner uses a homeowner float fund loan for short-term assistance on mortgages and when the homeowner wishes to extend the period prior to disclosure, such that all monies offered for temporary assistance are to be repaid. So just 2 changes there. Everyone okay with that? And then we're going to add a 5B. And the new 5B is repeal the parts of Proposition 13 that require a 2-thirds vote for any tax increase at the state level and replace with majority vote. And that's in line with what we decided on budget matters in the California budget and reform plank that we passed in Fulton. It's new, 5B. So, but it is part of Proposition 13 discussion. Number 6, corporate lobbyist and real donation, and after real donation, I'm going to define it, all donations direct and indirect to the same cause. Yes? Or at least relative to political parties. Then number 8, high luxury, recreational, encyclable, there's no change there. Number 9, elimination of tax subsidies to landlord and insert above a high, an appropriate high profit level. Above an appropriate high profit level. So it's not to all landlords, it's only the ones who are making too much, if you like.
How much is too much?
Beyond the tax table,
right. You
could say. You can give me guidance on what it should be there.
Leave it the way it is.
Right, we're going to have a process for questions and concerns, so Shane finish his presentation, please.
Yes. And in the last sentence, the developmental projects are linked to regional needs, such as the construction of more new housing units close to public transportation, should be exempted rather than accepted, to make it clearer, and so that people can't mistake accepted for accepted. Number 10, implementation. Do you want me to reread number 9? Okay. Elimination of tax subsidies to landlords above an appropriate high profit level and to real estate speculators, interest write-ups, depreciation deductions, depletion allowances, capital gain exclusions, and other exemptions and inclusions. Developmental projects that are linked to regional needs, such as the construction of more new housing units close to public transportation, should be exempted rather than accepted, even though it means the same. It's just that some person thought that could be misread. Is that okay? Number 10, implementation of resources. Instead of having, California has no oil extraction tank by itself, just place it in quotation marks. In parentheses. Yes, so just put California has no oil extraction tax in parentheses. Number 11, instead of to date, up to the present. Some people thought that was a little difficult to, not as clear as it should be. And that's it.
Jan Arnold, Alameda County. Thank you very much for the work you've done up to now. I still have a question about the item 5, the adjustment of property taxes every 10 years. What does that mean? I understand that the longer someone owns their home, the greater the disparity grows between the tax I pay and the tax someone who buys the house next door to me pays. I understand the problem, but I don't see how, I don't see that, this is not clear to me. How would we adjust them? Would we bring them into total parity? Would we bring them into, you know, how would we adjust the property taxes every 10 years? That's my question.
We'd have to essentially leave it to people to implement. The other alternative is just to delete it, and I'm prepared to delete it. Okay?
Perhaps someone else has a suggestion.
Yes, maybe.
Commercial
property
yes.
tax?
Yeah.
Yes, the very first sentence would become adjustment of commercial property taxes every 10 years.
So that would
would be, so I want to follow up on that question there, too. According to Lenny Goldberg from California Taxpayer Reform Association, you're reassessing the property, but sometimes people sell the property before that 10 years is up, and they don't reassess it. That was the other issue that came up. And the other issue is that I saw this platform, but the one you talk about, there's a 1% campaign. Do we support any campaign that would make sure that they would be raising, that people who have 1% of the income would be paying some taxes, upper income, to pay just a 1% increase?
No.
So that would be something I would, you know, if that would be a core of my question. So my question is, can we add some kind of plank to that that would add that to that?
Well, you'll have to come up with some wording.
Okay, we do. We have some wording on that.
Line one. Line one, I think.
Yeah.
I give you a chance to write something.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, who's next on the staff for questions?
Bob Marsh, Alameda County. Under five, well, I think it's a bad idea in general to put specific numbers in things unless they're examples. So I don't think you should say every 10 years, because maybe we should do it every year or every 5 years, or I think we should leave the idea to that we think it should be adjusted regularly rather than never as it is now.
Well, the problem is on that is that we don't want it to be 100 years, which it could very well be.
Well, if you put a word like regularly or something, I mean periodically, yes.
At least 10 years, would you?
At least every 10 years. I mean, but we shouldn't be having two. We shouldn't nail things down to specific numbers. You know what I mean? It's the principle that we're applying.
Oh well.
At least would include the resale situation.
The law already says it's supposed to be reassessed when it sells. So, for example, Patty and I bought our house in 1973. So you wouldn't believe how low taxes are for us. But I can tell you that we paid the total price of our house way less than a down payment is today. But anyway,
okay,
then next question.
Would you agree with adjustment of commercial property taxes at least every 10 years?
I think you should use the word periodically, comma, at least every 10 years. Yeah.
Okay, periodically.
Yeah. Because we're trying to say principles here. Then the next question is, I don't understand what corporate lobbyist and, quote, real donation, unquote, taxes are.
Well, where are you?
Number six.
Oh, okay. Well, all donations, direct and indirect, to the same political party.
I don't know what that is.
I have no idea what you're trying to say here, so I think you need to clarify that.
Okay.
Okay. So going back to number five again, about that commercial property taxes, do you think that it's generally understood that commercial includes industrial, or should we add commercial and industrial to clarify that industrial isn't? Because sometimes people think, you know, commercial is just public commerce as opposed to.
Okay. That's fine, though.
Okay. I just wanted to reiterate. Bob's question about number six, I don't understand what that is at all.
Okay.
And I wondered if on number nine, where you're saying above an appropriate high profit level, did you mean profit or income? That's all I'm asking.
I'm sorry. Which
on
one?
Number nine, you number added nine. A clause that said above an appropriate high profit level. And I wasn't clear if you meant profit or revenue.
Which would be better, in your opinion?
Revenue, because they can always fiddle the profit.
Okay.
What's that?
Okay, I accept that.
Oh, I beg your pardon. My name is Jean Rosenmeyer. I'm from San Francisco. And I'm a tax accountant.
And our treasurer. Come on. Yeah, next one.
We're going to call for a staff for concerns next. And Shane, do you feel you answered the questions, or do you have any further clarification while the staff is collecting?
I'm inclined to delete the number six.
Yay.
It's not worthwhile taking the time.
Okay. All right, so we're asking for people.
people with concerns and affirmation, the form of the staff, and Jane will assess when the staff has been formed and called closed. And I ask the timekeeper, we have our time situation on this item.
We have 13 minutes left. Excuse me, we have 8 minutes left on the item.
Okay.
Actually, this is just presentation, and we're figuring out correct, so that we're not going to rely on the
timekeeper. I can't hear you, Barry.
We allocated a quarter
hey, guys.
For presentation.
I
can't
hear.
We're going to break out the working groups and then come back after lunch.
Okay, so we can close the staff and finish the process on this proposal after one, and Shane can meet with people who have concerns. Okay.
That's right.
Please try and speak as briefly as possible.
Go ahead. Gloria Purcell, San Mateo County. I'd like to generally affirm this. I have problems with it, and a few of them are like individual problems. On number five, I agree with Shane that I'd like to see adjustment of property taxes removed from that, just removed. On some of these others, especially the last few, but really all of them, it's a laundry list of different things that people have thought about. And it's good that we've done the thinking, and it's good that we have the platform plank, but I would like to see this platform plank, my personal preference is to see it passed and then revisited, continued to be worked on. My biggest problem with this is philosophical, if you will, that a tax plank, in my opinion, for the Green Party should not look like the tax plank for a Democratic or Republican Party. I think we need to have in here some items that present our views on other issues like overpopulation, overdensity, crowding, and water supplies in California, and other things. And I'm not saying we should mention all those things. I'm saying that we should give thought to how we would do a tax structure that helped to address those things. And none of that is in here. It's all just, you know, tax on plastic bags and stuff like that. So that's my comment.
Number 12 kind of partially addresses your concern. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm Caroline Yacoub from Santa Clara County, and I'm kind of surprised that nobody mentioned three at all, although people who have big inheritances and live off their unearned incomes are evidently all assumed to be bad people. I know some old people who are living off their capital, off of their interest, and I don't think that this is fair. I think number three is making unwarranted assumptions about unearned income and is going to hurt people I know.
Tian Harder from Santa Clara County, first name T-I-A-N. In number eight, I would like to see gasoline taxes added to the list. And the other thing is, I'm disturbed by the fact that you're trying to get rid of the supermajority for higher taxes, because I think that supermajority requirement is what keeps the majority from exercising tyranny over the rest of us. So, thank you.
John to Everett, San Mateo County. Actually, what Caroline just brought up sort of brings together. My concern, which Shane knows I have a lot of concern, and he seems to have attempted to adjust it, was the number, is it eight, about landlords?
Number nine.
Okay, being a landlord myself who doesn't make any kind of anything vaguely resembling an excessive profit or excessive income. when you have empty apartments for months and months on an end, but other than like what Caroline pointed out, number three, you're not talking about people that make excessive income, like baseball players or whatever, any other place, but you do are in landlords. And even though I don't like the idea that landlords make a lot of, the really rich landlords are making a lot of money, it's like if they didn't have tax write-offs, why would they provide people with, why would we have a stock of rental property? And people need to live in rental housing. So if they don't have any incentive to have a rental property, I don't see why they would do it. So I think the whole thing is sort of misguided, and I would rather see us have a whole general principle of we don't think there should be such disparity in income everywhere, not just for landlords or for capital gains, people living on their interest income, just in general that we'd have that principle.
Randy Hicks of Sacramento County. I did find your language. Your language would say, it said reinstate the top income tax bracket, increase the alcohol fee, and broaden the sales tax base to intangible commodities. The key word is intangible commodities. And that's the big thing is to raise the tax bracket on the income of $3.5 billion. They would just get that much money if you increase it on the tax top tax bracket. So that was, I would kind of put some kind of verbiage in there that says that.
Well, could you
I will send it to you. Yep, I'll send it to you. And it would simply say that.
Okay. What we're going to do, since there's another 30 minutes for this proposal after lunch, we're going to stop now because we're just about out of time. Everybody in the stack, look at the person in front of you and back of you, because we're going to have to work on the honor system to reconstitute the stack. We come back on this item after lunch. But we're going to ask the All right. Matt says we don't need no honor system here. So, Shane, thank you. We're going to return to this item after lunch. We need the COCOs or coordinators for the four, from the four groups from the breakout sessions to come up. We're going to take a quick straw poll as to who is going to which of those sessions. So I'm going to hand the microphone to Jane to do that.
Could I also ask the host committee to let us know where the breakout sessions were intended to be?
Well, that's why we want to
see how many people we have. Okie dokie. So our breakouts were for CCWG, green issues, media, and platform. Okay, so we're not having media, is what you're saying?
I don't know.
Okay.
Where's Kraft?
Okay. Sorry. Platform.
Here.
Media. Who's the media person? Okay. So people want to do media here. Green issues. That's you. That's you first. Okay. And then CCWG. Canada.